welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And today on the show, we're talking about the Healthy Homes Act and its implementation date. So I had a text from a listener of the show who said, well, what are the implementation dates for Healthy Homes? And I thought, you know what? We're in 2021 now. They're approaching. They're on their way. We've got to talk about it, to go through these standards in even more detail than we've been through in the past to really understand Healthy Homes. It is one of the big pieces of legislation that's coming out. But what I want to talk about, just before I let Andrew talk about the implementation dates, I want to talk about what's already been implemented, because some stuff has been implemented. So the government did unveil the Healthy Home Standards back in February 2019, trying to make rental properties healthier for tenants. You can understand that. In July 2019, every property needed a statement of insulation for any new or varied tenancy. So if you updated that tenancy agreement, you needed to make sure there was ceiling and underfloor insulation, unless it was totally impractical for that to happen. And you need to have a statement of whether your property is compliant. So there's a lot of paperwork and compliance that is being issued. Now, the other thing that was brought in last year, December 2020, is there needed to be a statement of existing compliance for any new or renewed tenancies that goes through each of the standards and says whether the property is compliant or not. And again, that happened from December last year, 2020. Now, when you say, well, Ed, what is a statement of existing compliance? It is literally a 13-page document that meticulously goes through each of the standards. You tick the boxes, you say what level of insulation you've got, whether it's got appropriate drainage, all of these little things so that a tenant is able to see this. So here's an action point for you. If you've signed a new tenancy between the 1st of December and today, whenever you're listening to this, email your property manager and ask them for that Healthy Homes current level of compliance statement. So you can A, make sure that it's there, and then B, make sure that your property manager is actually doing what they need to be doing. But Andrew, talk to us about these implementation dates, because these are the ones that a lot of people are hearing about at the moment, and there's a bit of confusion about what they actually are.
If you sign a new tenancy from the 1st of July this year, 2021, it needs to comply with Healthy Home Standards within 90 days. And you've got a grace period before it needs to be fully implemented, but it needs to be done within that 90-day grace period. And also from that same time, boarding houses must also comply. Now, from 1st of July 2024, the government's aim is to have all rental properties compliant. So your date for compliance is whether or not you sign a new tenancy agreement or vary the tenancy agreement after the 1st of July plus 90 days or 1st of July 2024. So what that means is the date for compliance is whether or not you sign a new tenancy agreement or vary the existing tenancy agreement after the 1st of July 2021. And remember, you've got that 90-day grace period. But if you've got a tenant that just stays on the same lease and you get to the 1st of July 2024 without a change in tenant or change of tenancy agreement, then you have to still be compliant by that date. But that's probably the rare instance.
Now, the interesting thing, remember, we did an episode, a very good episode, if I can say this, Andrew, not that long ago, where we went through Venture Management's rental book, just under 300 properties, and under 15% of them complied from day one. 85% needed something to be done in order to meet these standards. And it is because they are very, very stringent. So let's go through each of these standards. And remember, each standard has like a 12-page long document from Tenancy Services that walks you through exactly what needs to be done. So when I say these are technical, I really mean it. So the first standard is draft stopping. And this one makes sense. You've got to plug up any gaps or holes that cause a noticeable draft. Now, this includes any unused open fireplaces, any chimneys. But remember, and I remember talking about this on a previous episode, but I love this story. Properties tend to fail because there might be some small gaps underneath doors which create a draft. So if you've got a property with an internal access garage, well, of course, the garage door that goes up and down lets your car in, that's probably not going to be totally secure. It's going to cause some drafts. Now, if those drafts then come in and go underneath the internal access door that goes into your hallway, that can potentially create a draft. Now, that's simple to fix. Get a draft stopper underneath the door. Now, it does have to be fixed in. So I mean, going to Mitre 10 or Trade Me, spending $40 and installing one that's just at the bottom that stops that draft. Or it can cost, you know, $100, $120 for a handyman to buy and install. But, and I don't think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, the draft standard isn't just confined to the bottoms of doors. So I remember one listener texted into 5522 and said, hey, My property failed because there was a draft in the kitchen caused by a cat door. So wind was getting in through the cat door, failed on that, and because of that, I needed to undertake some remedial action. So this one's not the most technical standard, but there are some interesting ways that properties can fail it. What about insulation, Andrew?
So the Healthy Home Standard takes it further, setting a minimum R value for insulation, and this measures how well the insulation resists, hence the R, heat flow. So underfloor insulation across the country needs to have an R value of at least 1.3. Now, there is an exception if you can't access the underfloor, but that's the required value, the R value, 1.3. And the ceiling insulation must be at least 120 millimetres thick. Now, just bear in mind that insulation tends to sink down over time, so it's not something that you can just rely on to be perfect forever. And as well, if you've got people working in the ceiling, you'll find that they will often crush this over time. Just remember, the R value of ceiling insulation does depend on where the property is in the country. So in Auckland and Northland, where the temperature is warmer, the R value for ceiling insulation is 2.9. And actually, that's also the same for the rest of the North Island, which is 2.9, but it is a separate zone, so maybe there are changes to come for that later on. And for the whole of the South Island and Central North Island, the minimum is 3.3. So how do I figure out my R value? So you need to check the insulation packaging, so the pink bat packaging. And if your insulation was installed a long time ago, there might be a product label stapled to a beam in the attic, because that's fairly common. Typically, a property might fail the standard because the insulation settles over time, as I was mentioning before, and the thickness becomes less effective. So again, it's not a one time and then it's done, and it may have moved accidentally. Or, and actually I had an interesting one the other day from Venture. I had a call from Linda, who runs Venture for us, and she had done an inspection, and the investor who had invested in a new build, the builder had completely missed out some of the insulation. And the crazy part about this is it had not only been checked by the builder, but it had been checked by the council. So it is important that you still go through this process of having these checks done. In that instance, and it was a major developer, they had it fixed within about 5 minutes. They got round there. They're pretty embarrassed by this oversight and got it done. If you have got an issue with the insulation, you can actually add some extra material on top of what's already there. So it's a relatively easy fix, albeit maybe a bit of expense.
Now, heating is an interesting one. This is one we've talked about. Oh, it is. Now, the interesting thing here is that you need to have enough fixed heaters so that you can warm a lounge area to 18 degrees even on the coldest day of the year. Now, I checked this out for a property in Christchurch, and the coldest day in the year is -4 degrees. So you've got to have enough fixed heaters to warm this space, a lounge or the living area, by 22 degrees, from -4 up to 18 degrees, which is like the middle of the winter and the middle of night. And you can use an online assessment tool to calculate what this happens to be, because it's obviously different. If you're in Invercargill, it's not going to be -4, it might be -8 or something along those lines. If you're in Northland, it might not be -4, it might be 2 degrees, whatever it happens to be. What these tools will give you is the minimum kilowattage that's needed of heating appliances to get to the standard. And your property is going to be so different from the next person's property, because if you've got more windows in the lounge because you've got really nice sliding doors or something like this, you're going to need more heat pumps. You're going to need more heating because more heat is going to escape through the glass. If the glass is single glazed rather than double glazed, you're going to need more heating. If the property doesn't have as much insulation, you're going to need more heating because you need more energy in order to be able to warm this room up. So it is so dependent on the shape of your room, the insulation, everything that is to do with it. So you really need, again, this is probably one of the more technical standards. You're probably going to want a professional Healthy Homes assessment company to check this out for you, which usually only costs a couple of $100. Talk to us about ventilation.
And actually, just another point to that heating, depending on when you bought the property or whether or not there was already heating in there, might depend on what the solution can be. So previously, you were able to top up the shortfall between a heat pump by putting on wall panel heaters. Now, if you're building a new property, you can't do that. You have to have the right system in there. So that's really important. If you are buying a property that's new, make sure that it is compliant from day one, because you can't just do the simple fix of topping up. Next is ventilation. So all rooms need to have a door or window that can be open to the outside and be able to be fixed in an open position. Also, the other part to it is the windows and doors need to be at least 5% of the room's floor area. So a 20 square meter room, for example, needs to have at least a 1 square meter worth of windows or door that can open and stay open. Extractor fans also come into this standard. So kitchens and bathrooms need to have ventilations that go externally. And if you bought an extractor fan for your bathroom or kitchen after the 1st of July 2019, there is minimum size and power requirements. If it was before that, there's no minimum required. It just needs to be there. If your property fails the ventilation standard because a window isn't opening correctly or the ducting for an extractor fan has a tear or a kink in it, it's the landlord's responsibility for maintaining that extractor fan. So they've got to clean out the dust, repair the tears, all of those kind of things.
And that's even if you meet the healthy home standards and then over time more dust gets in there. And that's actually the same with our next standard, our final standard, which is moisture and drainage. So this one is, again, pretty simple, but you've got to have enough drainage spouting on your roof to take any water and direct it to a drain. And basically what they say is your property cannot regularly flood under normal rain. Now that makes sense, but here's where a home might usually fail this drainage standard. There might be some leaves, some debris, some foliage clogging a drain or spouting. And it is the landlord's responsibility to keep clearing out those drains of debris and leaves and maintaining those drains. It's not the tenant's responsibility to clear those out legally. You might also fail if there are some cracks or missing pieces in the drainage, which means some water spills out of the spouting, that it's not getting down to that drain appropriately. So that's where it would fail that healthy home standard. But let me ask you this, Andrew. What happens if you don't meet those healthy home standards?
So it's really important that you do comply, because the tenant has quite a lot of rights here. So if a tenant believes that the rental property they live in doesn't meet the healthy home standards, they can apply for a hearing at the tenancy tribunal. And the tribunal can order you to undertake the work necessary to bring the property up to the healthy home standard and fine you up to $4,000, which is paid to the tenant in most cases. And that's probably the key thing here, because tenants might see this as an opportunity. And because the money is going to go to them, we expect that tenants will actively pursue claims at the tribunal much more than they would if, you know, there was just a draft that, you know, was bothering them, but there wasn't any financial incentive for them to go to the tribunal. This means that you as an investor and property managers need to keep diligent records to ensure that the properties are up to code and that there's records of such.
And the final thing I want to talk about is that these standards are technical. So what should you do next? Look, you might think your property's healthy. You might think it's a good property. It doesn't make it compliant. And that's why landlords, we've got to invest in a professional healthy homes assessment, in my view. You've got to make sure that you know exactly what needs doing at these properties. And a lot of property managers are outsourcing this to professional companies because they're technical. And a property manager who's trying to keep abreast of all of the other regulation that they've got to, like the new RTA, they need to make sure that these properties are actually compliant. Now, it's usually pretty cheap, like $150 to $300. I know some of you texted me, told me you got it for $120. Plus, of course, any cost to remedy part of the property that doesn't meet the standards. But while you're doing this, I'd also recommend that you get that property manager to collate the paperwork. So provide that to the tenant. And in fact, from December 2020, this is required by law. So your property manager, they might not be undertaking the inspection, but certainly they're going to be the one who's managing the maintenance and then making sure that all the paperwork is collated. Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you've got a topic that you'd like Andrew and I to talk about, send us a text. Our number is 5522, or just flick me an email. My email is ed@opuspartners.co.nz. It'd be great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property.